Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Ward Stone. And Ward is going to talk about lead in the city of Albany. And Ward is a retired pathologist from NCON, correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure about being retired. I'm certainly retired from NCON, but not giving up on being a pathologist.
Terrific. So I saw you on Wednesday night, and you gave a speech, and you were talking about the correlation between lead and violence. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I did a lot of work on lead, ingestion of lead pellets and the like by wildlife in my wildlife pathologist job. I even developed a kit for testing for lead on things. But I didn't really hear much about violence being caused by the ingestion of lead and lead intoxication in people. But that kind of research has been done a lot recently. And so the case has been getting stronger and stronger. So it now is an accepted scientific fact that lead poisoning increases aggression in people. And, of course, we're reading in the paper about all the aggression in the cities and the shooting of various people, especially young people, and gangs, aggression with knives and fist fights, but lots and lots of guns. And I more and more I thought about the lead. And having done some studies in the city of Albany, I got the idea, my goodness, that if we cleaned up our cities and we cleaned up the lead, we would have one less reason for having the aggression and having this morbidity and mortality caused by lead in people today. To say nothing about the fact that it also, lead intoxication, harms the neurons in the brain. And you lose your cognitive ability, your thinking abilities, and you can imagine kids that get lead poisoning, they don't do as well in school as they would have otherwise done. They can't take courses that are very difficult that otherwise they could do if they hadn't been harmed by lead poisoning. So it's really a very serious problem. And there are multiple sources of the lead. Well known is a lead vein.
What are the sources?
Oh, okay. Well, there was the contamination of the soil by the burning of leaded gasoline. So you get in urban areas and streets that were heavily traveled by motor vehicles, where they were burning lead gas, so you got lots of lead that has come from that kind of a source. And then you got that attaching into soil, and you got the soil blowing around, getting on the on buildings and on the windowsills and on the shoes and so on of kids that walk, people who walk through the area, and they put their hand on their shoe, and they get the material. And I saw that they were burning various kinds of solid waste at something called the Answers Plant in the city of Albany. Well, I went there and studied the lead. There was a lot of lead in that material, in the ash. And in the building itself, you go in there and you could swab the stairs, you could swab the windows to the offices in the Answers Plant, and they would be high in lead. That's because the wood and so on that were burning, a lot of it had had paint on it, old paint with lead in it. They had toys made out of lead. They had all kinds of lead materials, plastics with lead in it. So there were a lot of things that were burning. Paper with print that contained some lead colors, printing on the paper with lead in it. There were a wide variety of things coming in. And so they contaminated with their smoke and with the ash. And what they did was they cleaned out the building from the ash. They took some of the ash out. They would do that quite frequently because they would fill it up. They burned so much material. They would actually spill the ash on the sidewalks when they drove around They'd have ash in the sidewalk, on the road, blowing around the area, and you'd see people walking by. Kids, for example, I saw bouncing basketballs as they walked down the street, and they went right through the ash, and ash on their basketballs. And you could imagine on their hands, in their mouth, just in the normal eating and behavior. They would take their sneakers or shoes off at night when they're going to bed. Lots of sources of ingestion, plus the fact that the smoke from the burners went on the all the local houses there in the city in Sheridan Hollow. So that was another source coming in the windows and the doors, carried in on the clothes of the people from outside. There are lots and lots of sources of lead. And I looked on the sides of the buildings, and you would find lead in the soot that was sticking on the buildings from the garbage burner or the solid waste burners that let this lead out, with lots and lots of other pollutants as well, carcinogens, cadmium, mercury, other kinds of metals. Were released as well, so there's quite a threat. But you don't hear anything about cleaning up the cities to make them better from the point of view of cutting down on aggression and to make a better place for people to live, which I think makes people happier, which means that there's more difficulty for those who want to excite aggression, run gangs and the like, coordinated with other kinds of programs to make a much better world. But I got to thinking, of course, I've had these strokes now, and I can't do the physical activity that I could do before. But I reviewed a lot of the cases that I did do. And, of course, this answers plan is one of them. There were 2,007 pages of material that I had accumulated on my studies of the answers plan in Albany alone. Haven't come got all the material yet, even found from my old offices, but boy, it's very difficult to get your data. I kind of think they don't want me to have my data to do cases like this, but I'm not getting paid or anything for it. I'm doing it for free. It's the kind of thing that you can do for free because it's very important, and all kinds of people are suffering from toxicants were put out of that answers plant and contaminated people and contaminated the state. There are people dying from undoubtedly of various cancers that they acquired all some of the toxins from that plant living in that area or who did live in that area in the past.
Last summer was a particularly violent summer in the city of Albany. There were a number of shootings, a number of killings, and the problem with lead has gone back many years, I am sure. So why do you think all of a sudden last summer there was a rash of violence? Do you think how can you correlate the lead with the violence, when there's been lead in Albany for years and the violence wasn't as bad as it was last summer?
Well, I'm not sure of that. I'm not sure that the violence was worse last summer because you've got to concentrate on recording violence. And I think that they did some of that. They may not have done anywhere near as much. Say in 1940 or 1980, they didn't do as much.
Right.
Of it. If they did,
okay,
they would have worried about a lot more about cleaning up the lead. But I got to thinking about some of the reasons why the lead is not cleaned up. And somebody who works in our dining room here where I stay at Diamond Ridge, she had a relative right there and that area of Albany, Sheridan Hollow, little kid about 2 years old, and the child, I think a girl, has lead poisoning from the paint inside the building. Now, we've known about that for a long time, about the lead in paint. And so, in fact, we stopped allowing lead in paint was going to use on the inside of houses in the 1970s. So it's been a while, but it's still there, of course. So it may be, it may have other paint on top of it, or it was cleaned up, sanded and cleaned off the walls, but not completely, and still has dust, or it has parts of the house, exterior or porch, which has got flaking paint containing lead, while other parts have been cut down upon. Well, why wasn't that totally cleaned up? Why did we make a high priority? I would say because of profit, because of money. All the people who own those houses in the areas like that who are collecting rent from people who are economically strapped for funds in the first place and can't really afford to fix the place up where they live. And they pay rent out just to people who buy those houses or even a bunch of those houses in order to make money, and they don't fix those places up. So I think we need to take a look at that and look at the need for legislation to cause those buildings to be cleaned up and cut down on the number of kids. These kids, when they get poisoned by lead, there's a lot of things that I think need to be done. But that's one of them. Clean these areas up, and the play areas and the playgrounds and the streets, any places where these kids go, clean up the lead, because you're really robbing these kids of life. That pollution that has gone on in the past and any more burning of that type, which might come in the future, because you know they still are doing that, burning waste and burning garbage in various places. Although not in Sheridan Howell, although they may try to bring it back. That kind of thing needs to be stopped in the apartments and houses that they live in, these kids live in, grow up in, need to be made lead-free. Because
now,
once they start getting it, it'll follow them all their life. Their central nervous systems, their brain, their spinal cord, so will not work as well as if they hadn't been poisoned by the lead. And that's not like, you know, if you get measles or something, and you might have something that lasts with measles, but say you're getting most of these infectious diseases like mumps or something, you've got vaccines, and that's helped a great deal increase human survival in kids and less damage to their other organ systems. It's been a boon to survival with these vaccines. But the lead is still out there. And this, you take that, you get treated for it, but you still get the damage from the lead to your nervous system, and that stays forever. You don't get a near complete or complete recovery from the lead intoxication. So that's one of the reasons why we should be very, very careful about lead. Because I did some studies with my daughter, Montana. She came home and she had some jewelry that she picked up at some parties in the suburbs of Albany. And they were very heavy jewelry and obviously a soft metal that would easily scratch and dent up, which would not be something that people who are going to keep jewelry for a lifetime would want to have. That's why we use gold and things like that, which is expensive and a lot harder and will keep the shape of the jewelry rather than lead. Well, they actually were selling lead. I was the pathologist for the state then. It was a nightmare getting anything to move on that. I remember asking some of the senators down there in the legislature when I was testifying why it was. They said there were a lot of people opposing banning lead from making this cheap jewelry. What they would do, they take like the balanced material used like make lead on an automobile tire, and they would get piles of that, and then they would melt that down and make this cheap jewelry. And a lot of that was made overseas, was made over in China and some in Korea and places like that, mostly in China though, some in a few other spots, including I think I saw some led stuff from Turkey too. And they would use, they would have all these things, and they would sell them. He didn't buy them in dollar shops and shops that were selling cheap goods. One of the things that was a thing that would really appeal to people in gangs too was they had very heavy pieces that you could hang around your neck, and they were big lead blobs, eagles and tigers and the like, and they were big hunks of lead, which, you know, you get on your hands and wearing these things, and I even found some of the kids were putting them in their mouth and sucking on them. And these are worn sometimes from little kids, 7 or 8 years old, on up through 15, 16, 17, 18 years of age. So our society does not do the job that it ought to do. In talking to Save the Pine Bush, I talked about all the different ways that the lead got around, and not just lead, but pesticides and the heavy metals that I mentioned before, and a bunch of elements, other chemicals. I mean, we buried the ash out there in the pine bush. And after the Answers plant had done so many obvious pollution things and got shut down, the material went and was buried over there. It's buried over there in waste in the pine bush. And I was making a point. Here we keep talking about saving the Kerner Blue and various moths and some amphibians and so on in the pine bush, unique habitat, and it is still a dump. It is still a dump. What kind of society takes precious limited habitat for endangered species and puts toxic material in it? We talked about changes in the weather might be a problem. Well, when you have rotting garbage in the ground, you produce heat. What does that heat mean to the plants and animals of the pine bush? You know, that hasn't been worked out. But I picked here the people and the kids of Albany and of that general area of old Albany. Mm-hmm. And there's a real threat to them and to the old people as well. I found one lady who lived very near it, and she had a garden, and the garden was very high in lead. Was she mad at the Answers plant? No, she was mad at me for telling her because gardening was very important to her. And I was asking her to be awfully careful about gardening and really couldn't avoid the lead. And so she was mad at me more so than she was at the plant, which was only a short distance away, like maybe 50 yards away from her, her garden.
I think
she kept right on using the garden and keep going. I did write a letter to her physician and warn him about it, but I never heard back from them.
So have you tried to make the mayor of Albany aware of the lead problem?
I haven't. I have tried. I've called her office and left a message. She did not return my call, which is not surprising. Okay. She's very, very busy. And I am going to call the chief of police and also the sheriff and suggest that people that are arrested for various forms of violence should be tested for lead. And this will be good because it'll add to these statistics. It'll help build that case or not. And if some of the people have active lead poisoning, they need treatment. They need chelation or something to lower the lead in their bodies. And that'll be good for treatment of people who are, because there's undoubtedly a bunch of teenagers that are living in highly contaminated lead areas and playing in lead areas, areas that need treatment and don't know they're even being exposed. All of the play areas, they're set aside where there's, you know, like swings and teeter totters and the like are kept and enjoy a lot of kids into a small area. Make absolutely sure that they are clean there and that the grounds are clean and the soil is replaced with clean soil, because at least you're drawing the kids into play in those areas, or a place where you're playing basketball, have basketball hoops. That these are clean areas where the kids are going to play, because they spend a substantial amount of time going to those areas, and they would be important ones to clean up and make sure the kids are going to clean areas.
So I'm sure that this is not a problem that's unique to Albany. Would you say that this is nationwide?
I'd say it's probably global. I think these days
we have
to think, but I think you're right, Cynthia, that this is nationwide, coast to coast. I think if you went to Boston, you'd find similar problems in Boston, and certainly you'd like to see the data on Chicago. You keep hearing press reports all the time about the violence in Chicago, but all the way out to San Francisco, Oakland, any of these places, we're going to have it. And we do ignore important toxic problems, mostly to make money. One example of that we all know is smoking. And I remember, smoking was certainly, you had wonderful ads, Old Gold did this and Chesterfield that. And as young people, a lot of us wanted to smoke. It seemed to be a wonderful thing to do. When I was in the military, the tobacco companies came in and gave us free cigarettes and cigars and tobacco. And they kept us up as long as they could. So you have young people going to the military. They're mostly like 18, 19, 20 years old. And they would learn to smoke while in the military and have free cigarettes and get addicted to them.
Right. Right.
I got to eat with a lady here who was in the Navy, and she was a photographer in the Navy. She went to the same base as I did, and she learned to smoke heavily in the Navy, and she was succumbing from that result. Emphysema from smoking all her life. When I saw what I'm saying is that we ignore a lot of the most common sources of pollution and sources of human mortality and don't do much about it, because that's the way we are. And there's people who are making a huge amount of money who can press politicians and commissioners and the governors and the like to allow pollution to continue. And I notice that there are thousands of chemicals that we haven't worked on what they do, what their toxicity is, to a variety of organisms, including humans, where there's hardly anybody in government looking at those kinds of things. The priority isn't there. It's like on Hoosick Falls. We've all heard about Hoosick Falls and about a pollutant over there being in the water.
Right.
When did it first get into the water? How many generations have been exposed to it? And when you run the water through activated charcoal, you not just remove the compounds that are hydrophobic, that are easily attached to carbon, but any of them like that. So you're not even sure what other chemicals went through there in the past or even at the present are in that water. Although they may not be at the tap in any quantity at the moment while they've got the activated charcoal filters going. But there are literally thousands of chemicals out there, and certainly hundreds that need immediate work to see what their toxicity is and what it means to learn long-term exposure. And that's not being done. And I heard about PCBs at Hudson recently, and I was one of the first to go after PCBs. It's one of the first things I did. And then they pretty well took the PCBs away from scientists, except monitoring levels in the fish. And they made it a legal and political problem. And the attorneys and politicians kept from cleaning the river for 40 years or so after the PCBs were found. They did a pretty nice job of reducing the quantity of PCBs in the river. I hear about doing more, a lot more, make a high priority out of cleaning up the rest of the PCBs out of the Hudson. And I think that's okay, get the hot spots. But being one of the first scientists going after the PCBs in the environment, writing many articles about them, I think it's more important than concentrating on the Hudson and PCBs. Cover a variety of chemicals in a variety of waters, drinking and otherwise, especially after Flint, Michigan, too, where lead from old water pipes was making its way out and into the drinking water. And and the kids were getting a lot of lead intake from the water of Flint, Michigan itself. In other words, it's not like you hear about the president has appointed people to look at the environment. And one of the things they did was they reduced the amount of chemicals looked at, the laboratories, their ability to look at problems in the environment. And that's all to the detriment of the fish, the wildlife, and the people, ourselves, our children, grandchildren. It's absurd. It's totally absurd. And backwards.
Wow. So, Ward, when you get information from, you said you're going to reach out to the police chief and stuff. So when you...
Within the next day or so, I'm going to reach out and I'm going to call the Sheriff Apple and convey him what I think about it. And I will also call the Chief of Police in the City of Albany and tell them what I think ought to be done. And I will call some others, some politicians that I think would be wise enough to see that we get back and start looking at the chemicals and the contamination, because we're in a heck of a mess. I mean, it's easy to say, well, it's snowing and it's cold, and there's no such thing as global warming, and the weather's always changing. And that's true. It is always changing, and it changes every minute to some degree. But when you look at it overall, it's a lot warmer than it was in the past, and you've seen lots and lots of fires and droughts, problems that relate to climate change, global warming, whatever you want to call it. And we're about the only country not cooperating fully on doing something of that on a global basis. And, you know, the French Accords on that. The United States, we've got a lot of good environmental people. I mean, we're the land that produced the Teddy Roosevelts and the Rachel Carsons and so on. And here we are, backward on the environment.
So what I'll do is I'll give you a call in about a month, and you could let me know if you've made progress and whether or not you've made progress. Let's do another show about reaching out to the politicians and what their responses were. Would you want to do that?
Sure. That sounds really good.
Okay, terrific.
I greatly enjoyed doing that talk the other night at Save the Pine Bush. One thing I'd like to see is when I look out in the audience, I'd like to see a lot of young faces. We need to get
that
the young people coming back and working to save the environment. And I think, like all the problems that we have, most of the problems we have, they are global problems now. They always were,
right.
But we just didn't think about the global on a global basis. But that doesn't mean that we don't have to maybe pick a priority of cleaning up some messes in New York State or within the town that you live in. But we need cooperative since we share so many things, the kind of goods that we use on a daily basis, the chemicals that we use, and the atmosphere doesn't recognize borders. Fences on a map, or, you know, put in on a map. It goes right by that. Rain, snow, blowing dust.
Right.
It from around the globe. And so that's one of the reasons why we need to be global in our interests. Also, we can learn about the use of chemicals and pesticides around the world. Okay?
Okay. Yep. So, water. Let's talk again at the beginning of April, and we'll talk about what you've uncovered. So, you have been listening to Ward Stone, and this is Focus on Albany. So, if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Thank you, Ward, and thank you, everybody, for listening in. Have a great evening.
Thanks, Cynthia. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Bye-bye.